Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Hey, Discovered Wordsmithians, Ease, whatever. A couple episodes ago in 87, I had Donna Conrad on, and I apologized because we only had half of her interview. I couldn't find it. Well, I did find it. We had internet difficulties that day and lost our connections, and we moved from Zencastr over to Zoom. So here she is with the second half. I'm going to label it 87B, but leave it in the date order. So those of you that want to listen to it, you're not going to miss it. And I do apologize to Donna. I hope she can forgive me. And enjoy this episode where we talk a little bit about her book, the Mary Magdalene book, the historical fiction of it. And then we go into some author stuff talking about inspiration. And there's some really great talk about music, musicians, and some people she's actually known. So enjoy this episode.
We were talking music. You mentioned Joni Mitchell's a nice person. I think that's great. I love Joni Mitchell. I know Jaco Pastorius played with her occasionally, which is wonderful. Get to hear some good Jaco bass line. You've got two completely different books we're talking about, your memoir and your historical fiction. So for each of them, would you rather see it as a movie or as a TV show?
So House of the Moon Surviving the 60s, I think it would work as a movie because it is just a four-year period and it's just isolated incidents that are joined together by a common thread. And so I think movie. Okay. The last Magdalene is going to be, the Magdalene Chronicles is going to be a four book series. So I would love to see something with a series like a Netflix series or that type of thing going season after season, because she lived for, we think, about at least 88, 90 years.
Wow. I didn't know.
And experienced a lot. So she was born close to the beginning of the first century current era. She lived through the destruction of the temples. She lived through not quite to the diaspora, but she lived through Paul beginning his teachings and the establishment of the early church. And that, so it was a dynamic time her whole life. And then we also get to see into Egypt, which is the second book called The Lost and the Holy, which is when she leaves after the crucifixion, she escapes to Egypt, to Alexandria, which was the traditional place for Hebrews to.
And the books, what type of feedback are you getting from readers?
The Last Magdalene is not out yet. It's right now we're working on the cover. My publisher is having an artist do a rendering for the cover. So they'll all be unique and tied together. I'm really excited about that, taking my description, Miriam, for the cover. House of the Moon, incredible feedback from people, how they've always wondered about the 60s, how they felt. One reviewer said it was like going to sleep and waking up in the trenches. A lot of people saying that it gave them the courage to be more honest about their own lives.
Nice. Well,
and to revisit trauma, because the book is, I don't want anybody to think it's a fun, laugh-filled romp through the 60s. It's a very dark, disturbing book, because that's what the 60s were to me. As a time, you don't have to fight something if it's not about the 60s. You know,
as a tie-in, look at all the music that talks about that time period.
Exactly.
And the strife and the struggle and the things that went on through the 60s. And just look how the music changed from the early 60s into the 70s and then into the mid-70s, how different that music is.
Well, in the book, every chapter, every vignette has suggested listening. And it goes everywhere from What a Day for a Daydream through Slip Inside the House by 13th Floor Elevators. It does, but everyone, so either that was a song that encapsulates the chapter, like the first one, Barking Mad is Cheap Thrills by Janis Joplin, Big Brother and the Holding Company. Right, right. And because it's a Hell's Angels party in the woods. Not a good place for a teenager to be.
I have a friend that did a podcast on incidents that shaped music history. And he talks about Altoona, which I didn't know a lot about what happened. And I was like, wow, that's pretty intense.
The song For What It's Worth, which I think Buffalo Springfield, you know, that was about the Sunset Strip where something's happening here, what it isn't exactly clear. And again, I think that was not one of the first, but it was one of the notable police riots where people weren't doing anything in particularly wrong. And the police got their hackles up about it and started a riot. And then, of course, blame the kids. Which again happened in 68 in Chicago, which is another song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Yep. And so, yeah, the music reflected our times. And we were talking about another person that I knew relatively well was Jim Morrison. And the Doors' music was atypical of the time. He screamed out our angst and our frustration and are just wanting to be more than we were allowed to be. And he was an incredible poet that though skimmed the underbelly of what was going on. And I love one of his things, you walk across the floor with a flower in your hand, telling me I don't understand. He was not at all into hippie love, peace, and all of that. And when I first met him, I was 14. And very much peace, love, we'll get by. And that changes in the 60s when we realize that peace and love doesn't get you very far when you're up against a government that's being repressive.
And it's interesting because my son, who just turned 21, The Doors is like his favorite. And I find that great that there's still some kids, younger kids, that can not experience, but get the feeling of that time through the music. And then you got books like yours. Between those two, like somebody said, it's like living in the trenches. I think that's...
Well, it is. And if you listen to the music carefully, you had some very beautiful, peace-loving, let's get together now, let's find a way to agree, all the way up to, I mean, Pink Floyd and, of course, Led Zeppelin came on the scene. And you had the whole range of emotion of what was going on and how... And then there was a lot of what we affectionately called bubblegum music, which was just, let's just rock out to, which I didn't do much of. I was very much, once acid rock came in, that was my music. Well, and of course, the Beatles had to be there.
But the Beatles is probably his second favorite group. So,
yeah,
and
that's amazing. And I'm glad a lot of young people are still interested in exploring the 60s and what happened, because there's a lot of correlation between our times now.
Yes, I would agree. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, one nice product from the 60s was we got Scooby-Doo. So that kind of lingers and helps you out right there.
Now, my thing from the 60s was Dark Shadows.
Yes.
And it was Collins. Yes. I would come home from school to watch that.
Catherine, right? Is that who hooked us up, Catherine Carroll?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember because I got several people, other authors recommended, but I interviewed somebody else from this area and she's huge Dark Shadows. She's been to the house and had pictures.
Tell her, put her in contact with me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was the daily fix, Dark Shadows.
Yeah. She talks about it in her book. It's Catherine Carroll, one of the past episodes, like 5, 6 episodes
ago. Oh, I'll look it up.
Okay, so Donna, what are some of your favorite books and authors that you like to read?
In historical fiction, my favorites are Sharon K. Pinman, who's no longer with us. She did a beautiful series about focusing around Eleanor of Aquitaine and Henry II and all the way up through John and all of that. So a long time. And then Colleen McCullough, who did Masters of Rome and is no longer with us. I'm starting to feel old. And to me, they set the bar for writing historical fiction as accurately as you can and as entertaining as you can. Another one, Elizabeth Chadwick, who is still with us. Thank you, Elizabeth. Stay with us for a while. And she puts more of a romantic spin in her books, but that's okay. Everybody can deal with a little romance. It's wonderful. and she has a quite prodigious. And I'm blanking. The other Boleyn girl, not Chadwick. Okay, cut this part out. I can't remember, but I'm trying to remember her name. She did the other Boleyn girl, the River series, oh, the White Queen. Yeah, her.
I know that one. Here, I'll look it up real quick.
Blanked. Yeah, cut it all. Anyway, so modern, I don't know, historical fiction, there's a great book out now called Fortune's Child by James Conroy Martin, and it's about Theodora, and there's two books. I'm reading that now, and then it is historical fiction. I would think The Golem and the Genie by Helen Wecker, and it approaches historical fiction in the early 1900s in New York City with a fantastical side. Because the immigrants experience, but you have a golem, which is a clay figure brought to life in the Hebrew tradition, and a jinn or genie, which is from the Arabian tradition. And these two mythological or supernatural characters are trying to adapt to the immigrants' experience in New York City in the 1900s. So I think it's brilliant.
Nice.
To do that. And then also with fantasy, Marie Powell's books, the I'm Looking Down at The Last of the Gifted, Spirit Sight and Water Sight, is dealing with the invasion, conquering of Wales by Edward Longshanks in England, along with supernatural abilities of these two children that are the last of the gifted. So I like mixing it up. I tend to write very straight historical fiction. But I love it when people mix it up.
I read a big variety of things. So I'm not big on one particular genre, but I haven't read a whole lot of historical fiction other than Turtledove, Harry Turtledove. But that's alternative fiction.
Historical fiction, I think, gets a somewhat bad rap of being dry and long. And one of my beta readers, I particularly go to people who aren't incredible fans of historical fiction to get their feel. And I had this one woman who's a beta reader, a good friend of mine, but she said, I don't really read historical fiction, but yes, I want to read your book. And she said, I stopped watching TV at night. I had to finish your book. Nice. And she said, okay, now I've got to start reading historical fiction. So I think when you have, it's a pat on the back, good historical fiction, or you have historical fiction that brings people to life and brings their times to life, it's an exciting experience and you get wrapped up in the story.
Yeah, agreed. Philippa
Gregory, yeah. Thank you.
out of all the ones you mentioned, that was the one I recognized, but I couldn't think of it either.
I couldn't think of it. And I've read all of her books and I really enjoy them. And she goes far afield, but her research is, and that's what I appreciate. Anytime you're writing historical fiction, you've got to change. So people went from A to D, and you really want them to go from A to E. And so you move D aside, and then you explain it in your notes.
Right.
And that, but other than that, stay true to the time, stay true to the story.
Right. Okay, so do you have a favorite bookstore?
I have two.
Good.
One is local. It's called The Book Bin. And there are two locations, one in Salem, Oregon, and one down in Corvallis. But the bookstore to beat all bookstore, I think, is Powell's in Portland. I try to stay away from it. It is dangerous.
I have heard Powell's several times, but I haven't been there. So it's like, now I have to go.
Oh, you have to go. It's five stories in downtown. And it just has every book in the world. And I think it's wonderful. And the people there know books. They read. And so they know if you say, I'm looking for something like this and this, they take you right to it.
Nice.
Never been wrong.
Great.
So a great local treasure.
Okay. So Donna, before we move on to author stuff, finishing up all our book focus, tell everybody just simply why they should get your memoir and read it.
Because it is an honest, true, and visceral retelling of what it was like to be in the 60s. So if readers have ever wondered what it was like to live at that time, to know these people, you know Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix and other rock and rollers, and what it was like to get up every morning in the 60s and have to go to high school. And then this is a book to give you an insight into what it was like to be alive and active in the decade that changed the world.
Nice. That was good. I like that. Thank you. Appreciate you sharing all that with us. And it sounds like
a pleasure. Really
good book. Might be something I'll get my son.
I think he would like it. Rock and Rollers, although I must say, you know, No, I won't spoil it. Right. He can find out.
Right. Okay, so let's move on and talk a little author stuff. We're going to talk about inspiration for writers, but let me ask a couple things first. When you were writing you were a journalist, and then you wrote a memoir, and now you're writing some historical fiction. So what have you learned along the way that you're doing different than you used to do writing?
Now that I've honed the craft of writing. So once you know the basics, you know how to tell a story, then you're able to write from your heart and to say, this is real. And to me as a writer, if I'm not moved by something, I've done something wrong. And so I go back to the drawing board. And yeah, what I've learned is to be true to myself and to be myself and to tell the stories as honestly as I can, in keeping with the character. And that's, I wrote House of the Moon from the viewpoint, it's all present tense, first person, from a 14-year-old to an 18-year-old. I'm obviously not that now. So I needed to embody that, my former self, and remember what it was like and to stay true to the voice of a teenager.
And I'm going to bet listening to the music of the times helps get you back in that state, doesn't it?
Exactly. And so the suggested listening, it either encapsulated what that chapter was about, or it was what I actually listened to while I was writing it.
Nice.
And I do listen to music. That's that question. I do listen to music, but I have soundtracks for different books. And right now I'm writing The Lost and the Holy, which is the second book in the Magdalene Chronicles. And I'm listening to a lot of traditional Egyptian music.
Oh.
That tribal music from around the Alexandrian region to set the air. The Last Magdalene was written almost entirely to Peter Gabriel's Passion.
That's cool. I like that.
You know, and you set the mood, you set the time, and then you have your facts down and you have your writing miles under you, and then you just let your heart speak to the page.
And one thing I'll make a comment about history, and I think memoirs now like yours are filling in this gap, because we talked about history being very dry and people don't always learn a whole lot. And these memoirs now and the remembrances of times, at least modern history, help people understand it better. And one of the things that just always amazed me was in school, we never learned history from various places and how it went together. Because when you hear about the pyramids being built and that mm-hmm. there were still woolly mammoths on the planet at the same time, it blows your mind because they're so separated in how we learn about them. And I like talking about listening to the music because of the region, at least our culture, at least for me growing up, I don't associate the Egyptians and the pyramids so much with the stuff from the early Bible. But when you look at it, it's wow, that was the same time.
It was the same time. And Alexandria, of course, was founded by Alexander the Great and was a very Hellenistic society that was very Greek. The Ptolemies that ruled there were Greek. And so they influenced the native music and the native customs. And so you have this incredible blending in the music that is, we think it's authentic. Who knows?
Right. Yeah.
We weren't any podcasts to record these things.
Right. I mean, I've heard like Bach and Beethoven and those that they actually tuned the instruments different than we do now. So they heard it differently. So
speaking of which, Joni Mitchell's tuning.
Yes.
Her tuning is completely different.
She had a lot of experiment that she did. Mm-hmm. And I love some of her music. I believe besides Jaco, her husband played bass on a lot of stuff for a while. But yeah, I like Joni's one of those that snuck up on me. I didn't. My bass teacher turned me on to her. And it was really, wow, this is some good stuff.
To me, she's one of the most incredible poets right alongside Leonard Cohen. And you take the music side away from it, which just makes it such an incredible experience. But their words, both of them, are remarkable for giving other people a glimpse into the human spirit and psyche. And both of them, they didn't particularly talk about their times as much as their lives. And can you separate those two? Yeah, I don't know. We are a product of our times, but their poetry stands alone and the music just makes it exponentially better.
I think I've seen a book with like her song lyrics written out in as poems. Mm-hmm. And even maybe it had some sort of like original art with it or something like that.
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Again, we're back to not remembering. Brain cells. Again, don't do the 60s.
Yeah. Donna, when you're writing, what software services do you use to write?
Word. And a computer.
I hear that the most. I've only had, I think, one or two authors still writing on like legal pads.
I will take notes on a pad and I always have a pen with me, which hopefully won't be clicking too much in here, but I take notes when I'm reading or doing historical research. Somehow it's a more direct connection to me than with a keyboard. But one of the problems with my writing is I've gotten so I can hardly read it. So on the keyboard, somehow it's a separation. There's no separation between what my brain thinks and what my fingers key in. And a lot of people have been trying to get me to try like voice recognition. Mm-hmm. And while I'm pretty good at talking, I don't know that I could tell a story that way, but I think it's going to come to that one day.
I've dabbled in that and had trouble myself. Someone told me, because when you're doing that, they tell you quote, and then I said comma, quote, and next line.
Quote, period.
Yeah. And that throws it all off. And I had somebody say, why do all that? Just talk as if you're telling a story to your kid and then worry about editing and putting all the stuff in afterwards. Get the story.
I never thought of that.
And that's what I said. That makes sense.
You know, the early Romans had wasn't punctuation. Right. And that was one of the incredible things about Julius Caesar. He could read a letter where all the letters, everything is just strung together. And he could read it and make sense out of it when other people needed to have a scribe or somebody break it up into words.
Oh, smart man.
Until
he turns his back on the wrong person. What do you do to market your book? How are you getting the word out about your book?
That is tough. I have a marketing team. Now, to be honest, when my publisher put out House of the Moon, Surviving the 60s, I thought, and I think a lot of authors, first-time authors do this. I'm going to put it out there and everybody's going to find it. It was published in 2016 and not a lot of people found it. And so I started teaching more and teaching at writers' workshops and teaching online. And people started finding the books. But marketing is a whole different beast than writing. And so you need a good team around you. And whether that is marketing people or people that are excellent at social media or PR, which is different. I think public relations deals with you as a person and marketing deals with selling your book, which seems to be a divide that still doesn't connect in my mind. But we'll go with it. So find people you can trust and realize, even if you're with a big, what is it now? Three publishers? The big, it used to be the big five. It's going to be the big one pretty soon. That even with that, you need to develop marketing skills. You need to get your name out there. Do interviews like this one. Show up to writers' conferences. Talk to other writers. Every writer I know is a reader.
Right.
You have to be. If you're writing, you need to read.
And that's a dilemma. I need to get some more words down today, but man, this book is really good. There's a problem.
There's a problem. And what somebody said, what you love, because you're going to read it 75 times. Yeah. So you end up reading your own work a lot. But do with that. And I'm with a small press, but I'm finding I get a lot more attention with a small press because I'm a little bigger fish in a little smaller pond rather than going with Hachette and being, you know,
one of 55.
One in the middle. But check out who is supporting you. Have a good support team. And don't think you have to do it all yourself. You don't. And you can't. But most of all, if you're on podcasts like this, or if you're at a book signing, just be yourself. Just go out there and be who you are and accept yourself and accept your writing. And the word will get out, but it's a slow road.
Got it.
I was just at the Surrey International Writers Conference, and Bob Dagoni, who is a very big name and a very big seller, said it is still a slow process. And his book, The Incredible Life of Sam Hell, he just said it's just now picking up and starting to really outsell his other books because it's word of mouth. So to me, the best marketing is to have avid readers who love your work, and they'll tell other people.
I agree. Especially I write middle grade. So parents talking to parents is a big thing. So
it's still your best selling. You know, somebody reading and saying, you have, someone tells me, that's how I ended up with The Golem and the Genie. A friend said, you have to read this book.
Yeah.
And I trust her. So I'm reading it.
Yeah. The danger is, though, a lot of my friends are big readers. So I'll have 5-6 friends a week saying, hey, you got to read this book. You got to read this book. I read this book. I don't have enough time.
I have, right now, I'm reading 4 different books, depending on my mood. And yes. I have 6 more on my nightstand that need to be read.
Right.
And then to me, a great service is audio recordings. If I'm driving someplace in my car, and to me, that still counts as reading. Yeah. If you're listening, it's still supporting the office artist and still getting the story. So a lot of them, Kate Quinn, I listen to all of her books. I love the narrator on it.
That's important. Very important. I've got a few books. I listen because I love the person narrating it. I've got the book, but I don't even touch it anymore because it's so perfect.
It's so perfect. Another one that is great is any of Laurie R. King's, her Mary Russell and Sherlock Holmes series. The narrator is incredible. And I think I have 12 or 14 of them. And I can cycle back through them. But yeah, just keep reading.
Nice. And so we talked a little bit about marketing and how difficult it is. And that's one of the reasons I like this podcast, is because the people I talk to, the authors I talk to, aren't going, well, marketing's easy. I just pay my guys $5,000 a week and they market it. And, you know, a million people. We don't have that. We have people. And I think sometimes new authors or young authors or whatever listen and they hear, oh my God, I got to market. They lose touch, or they're writing and writing, I'm not getting any better. So you wanted to talk about inspiring authors to write, and you do talks at writing conferences and stuff. So what are some things that you say or that can help authors keep them inspired?
I would say, we've talked about this before and you mentioned it, my cup.
Your cup.
Which says, a smooth sea never makes a skilled sailor. So what helped me in the beginning was having other authors tell me, it's not easy. Accept it. You are alone with yourself, which can be really scary. And you're going to write and write, and then you're going to rewrite it. And to me, the best thing someone told me was, it's not easy, and you keep going because it's something you love. And the first, to me, important step in writing is to write. And I know it sounds rather simplistic, but if you don't write, you're not a writer. And it doesn't matter what else you do.
Right.
Writers write. And it used to be called, back in my journalism days, pencil miles. Now I think we can say keyboard miles. And somebody says 10,000 hours. Right. I don't think there's a... you can cap it at something. I'm still always learning. Like I said, I just attended the Surrey conference, which is an incredible conference for any writers. It takes place in Surrey, Canada, BC.
That's crazy.
British Columbia. It's just a wonderful, inclusive place. I'm still learning. In fact, I still learn something about historical fiction, and I learn something about being a writer from these people. And so never thank you at all. There's still more to learn. You can teach yourself, but find a supportive community that understands how weird you are as a writer. Because we're all strange. We really are. we sit alone in a room and create things.
We make up worlds, and if you piss us off, we'll kill you. We talked a lot about music, and I know music is something I and a lot of other writers help to get them in the mood, get them going. I have a playlist that if I'm feeling down, there's a particular playlist of every favorite song of mine. I just put it on for a couple minutes and I change my mood. Do you use music in your memoir, you said, when you were writing to do that? So what, other than music, what are some other physical things you people can do to help get them, you know, in the mood to write, inspired or anything like that?
One exercise that I do is to engage all five of my senses before I start writing. And that would be going for a walk outside. Or if you're in Oregon right now, it's too cold and rainy. I hear it's that way in Cleveland also. It's raining all over the world.
Yeah.
But just engage your senses. Feel something. Smell something. In this cup is Earl Grey tea, which is a wonderful smell and senses. And devote the time that you need personally to connect with yourself, to connect with your heart, and to connect with the characters in your story. I don't care if it's dystopian or if it's a happy fairy tale where everything goes, which never happens in fairy tales, but take a moment to just connect with yourself, with being alive, with being able to create. There are vast numbers of people who do not understand how we can create. And it is a phenomenal gift. So celebrate that before you start writing, saying, I am able to do this. I can do this. And find something inspirational that is personal to you. And invoke that, whether it's a prayer, it's a mantra, it's something on my computer, it's something I said way back in my journalistic days. I said, belief in oneself is something fate finds almost irresistible. Nice. And I look at that before I write. And I say, that is still true today as it was 40 years ago.
I'll have to maybe put that in the clip that we use for this.
Yes. You're welcome. It's on my website. And then go easy on yourself. Don't beat yourself up as a writer. Start off every writing thing with, I can do this. And I'm good at this. And I'm going to explore something new today. And again, if you have favorite music, if you have a favorite scent, if you have incense you want or a perfume that you use, put yourself in the mood and allow yourself to disengage from the busy world we're all in. And say, okay, this is time for me. And if all you do is sit there and all you do is open a document and you have nothing to say, that's okay. You've opened the document. You've given it a try. And that's all you can do. Just keep moving forward.
Yeah, you mentioned open the document. Channeling my inner Jeff Foxworthy, if you stare at a blank screen all day, you might be a writer. And I like what you said about taking a walk, because for me, doing something like that, where I'm away from the computer, which I can sometimes get stuck behind, and just going out. Unfortunately, even better for me is driving. If I'm driving, my brain starts firing. The problem is I've literally ended up in the wrong city because I forgot to get off at my exit. I was just thinking, so that's dangerous.
Yeah, but did you get a story out of it?
I did.
That was the city you were supposed to be in.
Actually, it started when I do a computer database stuff. I'd have a problem with a database and I'd go driving, put me in a different climate, change my mood, and the problem would solve itself. You don't know how many times little problems in a story. As a new author, I thought all my stories, oh, this is fine, this is perfect. As I learned I started learning, this needs help. And you get stuck, but I'll go make dinner for the kids and I'll be like, oh, someone stir this. I got an idea.
So I think that's a time that the brain needs to have some downtime.
Yes.
When it's not being focused. And that's it. That's why if we take a shower, do the dishes, or cook dinner, all of a sudden an idea pops up because the brain is, when we were trying to figure out Philippa Gregory's name, it's gone, boom. As soon as we stopped thinking about it, the brain went, is this what you were looking
pops
for?
Pops in, all the time. So, or middle of the night.
Just, Oh, two. My time is 2:15 to 3 o'clock. And they come. Actually, I wrote the opening lines to The Last Magdalene at 3 a.m. I woke up and boom, they were just there.
I love
and
that.
I was like, that's incredible. And the book flowed from there.
And sometimes that's what it needs. You got to hit that flow state. I was just talking to someone else about that, getting into the flow in the flow state. That's important sometimes, but you can't force it.
You can't. You can be there and you can show up at a regular time, at a regular place, and hope that the muse decides to join you. But if you're not there and you're not ready and you don't have the skill, then it doesn't matter how all three of the muses show up. Nine. So if all the muses show up, if you're not there, they're going to give it to somebody else. So show up, be there for yourself and for your art.
And I like what you said about community too. It's important to find one that you fit well with. I've gone to a couple critique groups that I'm just like, yeah, this just doesn't fit me. It's not the feel that I want. I'm in a mastermind group right now that I think has just spurred me a lot this year. And it's actually more the day job and family commitments that are holding me back more than anything else. It's not the writing in that. It is.
But that's why we need support groups, because we need other writers that have day jobs, that have families, that have cats, that have dogs, that have life is constantly in, and to find out how other writers deal with it, or if nothing else, just to have a good old fashioned fetch session to say, I'm so sick of this stuff. And everybody said, me too.
Right.
And finding your community is so important, and finding a good fit. And I'll say this to other writers out there. Working from desperation, whether it's to find a publisher, to find an agent, to find a writing group, to find a critique group, is never been. All of these relationships are very personal, and make sure it's a good fit. And if it's not a good fit, it's not you, it's the relationship that's off.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's a bad group or that you're a bad writer or anything. It just has to fit. We're all different, you know?
Exactly. And that goes on, like I say, to publishers, to agents. I don't know any writers that haven't gone through a few agents and unfortunately a few publishers, until you find a place that's home, and then allow for that to change too.
Yeah,
and always be aware, whatever you surround yourself with, make sure it's nourishing you and that you're giving back to the group or to the relationship.
Think of so many things or learn so many things that giving back will help more than you think it will.
And that's why I teach. Because I've learned these things and I want to share them and to let other people know that this can be done. We can do this, and it's not easy, but it is the best of all worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody needs more inspiration, I have a whole list of past authors I've interviewed on the podcast. I break them out by genre. So find the genre, go listen to those podcast and hear other authors with the same problems, same issues, same things they're trying to overcome.
And resolutions.
Yes. I got my book published. Here's how.
So, and you just keep trying until you find, like I said, I went to a small press and went direct and it worked out wonderfully.
Nice. Good. Donna, this has been a really great talk. So before we go and piece together the 500 different recordings we now have.
Only 500?
I think something like that. That might be a slight exaggeration. Do you have any other last minute advice for new authors?
Keep writing.
There you go.
That's it. You'll never get to the end of the book if you don't write it. And so believe in yourself. That's the other thing. Believe in yourself. You can do this.
Great. Donna, I appreciate it. It's been great talking to you. Your books sound great. Thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
And if anybody would like to read any articles or that, I have a lot of things on my website, or get in touch with me. It's pretty easy.
And I didn't even ask that.
You didn't. I got your back. I got your back.
So where can we find you online?
Yeah. DonnaConrad.com.
Got it.
Pretty easy. And if you can go on there, sign up for register for my website, and then I'll be glad to talk to you and exchange emails, or we'll have a little Zoom chat.
Nice. And where
writing community.
Where all can we find your book?
I'm online. at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and at some local bookstores. Nice. It'll be there. And then the next series, for those who are interested in historical fiction, should be out in, I think we've pushed it to June of 2022.
Okay. So we'll look for that. Great. All right, Donna, thank you very much. I appreciate the patience with all the...
No, I appreciate all you're doing for new and aspiring authors.
Oh, thank you.
We can do this together. It is a community.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.